Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope. Thank you for joining us again this week for another excellent interview here on Anthologies of Hope. As always, I'm your host, Rick Osowski, and I'm not a mental health professional in any way, simply a mental health advocate with a passion for storytelling. We had some time off last week with the arrival of baby Osowski, a full month early, but very healthy, happy, and even more importantly, home. To dig into some of the history around our miracle IVF baby, be sure to check out Amanda's episode earlier this season. We're a little sleep-deprived, running on pastries and energy drinks, as you can see, but full of love for our little baby girl. Moving along, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and all of our favorite mental health organizations are sharing a plethora of information and resources across all of their social media channels. Trite love and hope for the day included. This obviously isn't the only time to share these resources, but it's a great time to adopt some of them into your tool belt for when they can come in handy either for yourself or a loved one. On May 1st, we recently celebrated the one-year anniversary of the Sip of Hope Coffee Bar right here in Chicago's Logan Square neighborhood. If you haven't listened to many of our episodes yet, Sip of Hope is the world's first coffee shop where 100% of the proceeds go towards proactive suicide prevention and mental health education. It is run by Hope for the Day, one of our favorite nonprofit organizations here at Anthologies of Hope, and just so happens to be the location of all of our live Conversations Cafe episodes as well. During the anniversary celebration at Sip of Hope, we recorded over 2 hours of interviews with Sip of Hope staff, Hope for the Day staff, friends and partners of Hope for the Day, as well as local community members supporting what the coffee shop stands for in both the professional and everyday life. Mike Van Opel of Hope for the Day will be joining us to help with a fun supercut episode of all of these interviews, including Johnny Boucher, founder and CEO of Hope for the Day, members of the Dark Matter Coffee family, and Cook County Commissioner Luis Arroyo. That episode will be coming your way very soon to wrap up Mental Health Awareness Month. This week's interview will wrap up our regularly scheduled programming for Season 2, and we are definitely ending this round on a high note, but more on that in a bit. We will have the aforementioned Sip of Hope Anniversary Supercut episode, as well as the May edition of Conversations Cafe, to round out the bonus material for Season 2. We will definitely be back for Season 3 in the fall, or spring for our listeners in the Southern Hemisphere, with a whole host of friends in the mental health community, conversation, and journey. But first, we will be taking the summer off now that Baby O has arrived. So now, picking up where we left off with our traditional episode format from last season, we are continuing our interviews with members of the Heart Camp family. If you're not familiar with Heart Camp, we dive deep into the ins and outs of it on the intro of our first two episodes in Season 1. But as a quick refresher, Heart Camp is the brainchild of Jamie Torkowski and a two-day workshop focusing on authenticity, writing, bringing your heart to work, and mental health. For more info on Heart Camp, check out heartcampwithjamie.com for details or the hashtag HeartCamp18 on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Similar to the end of Season 1 and our interview with Candace, our interview this week with Jennifer May is another case of saving the best for last. There's much of the conversation with Jennifer that wraps up many different threads across both seasons of Anthologies of Hope. Intricacies of diagnosis with mental health conditions, following along with and feeling like you're failing at the checklist of life, where friends and community play a major part in your recovery of both of those, as well as how all of these will permeate into your everyday life. Jennifer talks about her growth with and through pretty severe anxiety and how she handles that on a regular daily basis. We dive into a pretty spectacular transformation from a self-ascribed girl who is afraid of everything to someone who has challenged herself to being on a plane at least once a month and exploring everything she can. We also dive deep into one of our favorite shows, A Million Little Things, and why it is so valuable to have the mental health conversation of all facets coming to primetime TV. I am so grateful for Jennifer for sharing her story, and getting to know her better over the past year has been one of my most cherished new friendships. She also wraps up the week with one of the most beautiful phrasings of the one takeaway from her story for all our listeners to hear. As you know, we are curating a pretty epic playlist as Season 2 moves forward, filled with both contributions from myself and our guests. You can still find it at anthologiesofhope.com/playlist. You'll still be able to find the Season 1 playlist under our user account on Spotify at anthologiesofhope.com/playlist-season-1. Adding to our playlist this week, JMA brings back an excellent band and extending Switchfoot's contribution to the podcast, so don't miss out on that one. My selections are coming from another playlist that we made for the arrival of Baby O, and one that hit me right in the feels. When I heard them after our little baby girl had arrived, they forced me to take a step back and gain some more perspective. They are both a little outside the realm of my normal genre of music, but they are absolutely two of my favorite songs, and now mean so, so much more. I hope they resonate with all of our listeners as much as they did with us in that room. My entries for this week are Alabama's I'm in a Hurry and Don't Know Why, as well as Hallelujah from Theory of a Dead Man. Each week, we'd like to remind you that if you're in a time of crisis, we will be covering a range of potentially difficult topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and come back to listen once you're in a more positive season. If you are in need of help, an abundance of international resources can be found on the Find Help pages from Troy Love in Our Arms and Hope for the Day. Troy Love in Our Arms can be found at twloha.com/find-help, and Hope for the Day can be found at hftd.org/find-help. As always, you can find us at anthologiesofhope.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Anthologies of Hope, on Twitter as Anthologies Pod, or email us directly at anthologiesofhope, all one word, no punctuation, @gmail.com. Like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Without further ado, wrapping up our regularly scheduled interviews for Season 2, join me in welcoming Jennifer May to Anthologies of Hope.
All right. So, hi, guys and girls. I'm Jennifer May. I'm from Texas. And so, Rick and I have become friends via Florida and Heart Camp. So, I will tell you, we just struggled, or I should say, I just struggled on even how to introduce myself. So, we'll see how this whole podcast thing goes.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to this based on the intro work that we were just doing, as well as a lot of the other topics that we have previously talked about face-to-face, and then catching up on one of our mutually favorite shows as well, too, to kind of see how that applies to everything else that we've been doing in the real world and mental health related there. So I'm interested to see where this one goes.
Me too.
And hopefully there's no background noise that spurs on or disturbs either of our dogs. So yes. Hopefully that stays there. So let's kick it off like we normally do with most of the episodes as far as talking about your journey and your mental health journey. And I know in the conversations we've had, you have more so a spiritual aspect to some of that too. So you've got, you know, an interesting background from kind of what you said played into a lot of your desire to further your mental health and to be more cognizant of taking care of yourself. So, I mean, wherever you would want to start in that, whether we start chronologically or whatever some of the big points are that we've talked about before, but, you know, what we normally cover for our mental health journey and what made us think that we eventually needed to seek a more healthier journey and prospect of that.
Yeah. So that's a good question. I am somebody who struggles with anxiety and maybe a little depression too from time to time. And I think it's something that I've come by honestly since I was little. So when I was in junior high, I got diagnosed as either ADD or ADHD, you would think I could remember. But I think really and this is not a like scientific opinion by any means, but I think in a large sense, it was just misdiagnosed anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so I've worried about stuff since, I mean, like I don't ever remember not worrying about things. And so that is something like that my mom and I particularly have talked about. And over time, she was like, you know, you might want to like talk to somebody about that. And it kind of manifests itself a lot of times worse at work. And I remember talking to some coworkers about it too. They were like, hey, just talk to your doctor about it. And so I finally, a few years ago, had the courage to do that. I remember one of the first questions she asked me was, like in this little quiz, was how many days a week do you think that you worry? And I was like, do you mean like worry once in a day or like all day? She told me that she thought I was overthinking it. And I was like, oh, then put me down for 7. And so we tried some medicine for the first time then. And it was amazing, just the difference in the level of anxiety. And I hadn't realized how much of it I had been living with on a daily basis and that wasn't normal. Mm-hmm. And so I've gone, you know, back and forth, like being on medicine, but it, like has changed my world in a way of like being able to see how you can live without that anxiety kind of on a daily basis.
Totally feel you there. And it ends up being a case where some of the early on symptoms end up getting misdiagnosed just due to age, due to a number of whatever happens to be more current in the, I don't want to use the pop culture reference, but whatever happens to be like in the currency of doctors diagnosing certain right. conditions and whatever the latest and greatest is, as far as more information, more studies, et cetera. But I would think now that there ends up being a little bit more information around the depression anxiety mix as we have more people talking about it and we can start right. seeing more of those, I would say, the invisible symptoms of those kind of come to the surface, as opposed to it just being something with kids who are more often than not, and again, in an unscientific conversation, being just mislabeled as ADD or ADHD for any number of other reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a lot for me. It was, I would get fixated on something and I couldn't let it go. And like, as an adult, that's a lot of how my anxiety feels, where if I'm like worried about something, I'm going to go 1,000 feet down that rabbit hole to like see if I messed up or to like run every scenario that, and you know, of anything that could ever happen. And so it feels in a lot of ways similar to that fixation mm-hmm. of things when I was growing up. And I mean, I was on medicine for a little bit of time in kind of junior high, and it helped me because it like let me see what life could be like without it. And then eventually got off it, and you know, like whether or not that ended up being the right decision, but I'm glad now to have language for it being more in an anxiety sense, because I think that's really what it was even then.
In my space, it ends up manifesting itself in something similar to, how am I going to do X? How am I going to do whatever in 30 years if I don't do this right now? And then it ends mm-hmm. up like backtracking there. And then I have to like stop and breathe and like talk myself back from that, where it's like there's the whole lifetime between now and then to figure that out and not have it be go 1,000 feet down that rabbit hole right away, just to figure out everything that I'm going to do right now is going to impact me right. and, you know, preclude me from doing that into the future. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I totally get without any alteration to that sentiment there whatsoever. Some of what else we had talked about was the notion of also having a little bit of a journey through or with your friends and your closest circles and some of your community, as far as now being kind of outside looking in from growing older, for lack of better phrasing, mm-hmm. and still being single. So yeah. Is there something there that, I mean, tied with some of this exacerbated it, but also ends up, you know, making you look for kind of, or affects your mental health in a number of ways?
Yeah, for sure. And so just kind of for context, I grew up outside of Houston and then went out of state for college and grad school, and then came back to Houston after grad school. And immediately I found a young adult group at a church in Houston that became this incredible, incredible community for about 6 years. And so, I mean, it like my best friends in Houston are still friends that I made at that group. And we were all kind of in our early to mid 20s when we started going there. And little by little, like my friends started marrying each other, which was really great and happy for them. I mean, there was a period of time I was in a lot of weddings. And as somebody who grew up always kind of longing for a best friend, to get to be in so many weddings was a gift. But as years went by, I started noticing that like I was quickly becoming one of the only ones who was still single. And then the young adult group ended up ending when our pastor moved back to Ohio, which then kind of everybody had their own kind of partner to really go look to see what was next for them. And in kind of the years after that, and then even some recently, like being single has been, it's not that easy for me. You know, it's been something I have a lot of experience with it, mm-hmm. but it has been hard watching a lot of my really, really good friends just pass me in life, you know, and go from dating to married to now having kids, multiple kids, and kind of just wondering, where do I fit in that? And so, and then it gets really messy when it's kind of combined with a church experience and a faith experience of kind of looking at like, where do, not only like within my friend group, but to some extent my own family. And then like the church, like where do people in their, I'm going to say early 30s. It's probably not a very accurate description at this point. But like in their 30s who are single, like fit. And so over the last like really year or two, that became really kind of hard again. And it's those days where you start wondering, or at least where I start wondering, where do I fit? Like, who's going to remember me someday when my parents aren't alive? Like, will I still be part of anyone's family? At that point, really like started, you know, it starts messing with you a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that kind of has been a hard part to navigate as well. And one where I think like maybe I started seeing some more like depression in addition to some of the anxiety. But so it's just been, it's been interesting, but I feel like I'm coming out on the other side of like a hard, I don't even know if it's a hard year or 2 years, and I'm seeing a lot of hope again, which is really awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm very grateful you're able to define it as hope that you're seeing coming out of that and seeing what you're looking for and what you're going after and what you want, where it's not being caught there and kind of seeing a lot of the negative aspects, I will use that term, of what kind of society places on us as individuals, but also even more so, like you were saying, as a someone in their 30s in a faith-based and religious-based setting and some of that stuff, where it's it kind of just due to history and a lot of stereotypes and things like that, it ends up being something where, you know, there's that checklist and you need to get it done or else you're failing. And what are you going to do? And let's catch up and all that stuff. And we talked a little bit about that at, with Aaron in our first episode. Yeah. In our first season where, I mean, her whole big thing is, you know, railing against the checklist of life. And I think that really resonates with what you're saying here, where you know that like the checklist of life is a falsehood, but you don't know what the alternative is. So still trying to figure right. that out and how, and knowing that even though, you know, that is not true, what does that mean to you and where can you take it? And what, like, what does that mean for you on a day-to-day basis? Then even if you know, your end goal, how do I get there? Or how do I maintain myself in the yeah. interim?
Yeah. I mean, 'cause like so much of our society is built around like, you want something, just hustle for it. And, you know, and like you spend all of your going to school and then you go to college and then maybe go to grad school and you get a job. And then it's just like, you're just taught, like, if you just work hard enough at something, you can get it. And that's certainly true in a lot of areas, but like, there are a lot of things in life. It doesn't matter how hard you work for, like, there's a little bit of luck mm-hmm. associated with whether your dreams come true. And I mean, I'll say like, it's been really interesting over, and I've had moments of gratitude. I mean, for sure, of like recognizing that the pain that I've walked through in those hard days have like enabled connection. And like, I think have really helped me be able to see people better when they're hurting than I would have ever been able to had I just gotten everything I wanted in accordance with the timetable that I wanted it in. And that gratitude's reemerging in big ways and just realizing that in a lot of ways my life is richer because I've walked through kind of dreams deferred and have spent extensive periods of time in waiting. And it's just, it's kind of an interesting place to be where you get like kind of grateful for hard days.
And that definitely ties back into a conversation we had back in Florida this year where everybody else, when we were hanging out, was, I have no idea what they were doing, but they were goofing off, making a lot of noise. And you and I were having a very serious conversation, but it ended up being something around a lot of spiritual and faith-based perspectives and things like that. And it stuck with me till then. And then in shooting over some notes, you had sent it today, that the one thing that I keep coming back to is you keep saying that the pain can be redeemed. And that's exactly what like I'm seeing and the sentiment I'm feeling and all of this stuff is that there is a case for it where, again, like you have to go through it. And I think I even used it in the episode that went up this week for one of them where it is like, you know, the phoenix can't be reborn until it's gone through the fire. And so it's right. it's very much a that sentiment where, again, kind of like you said, going through the past couple of years that – weren't so great on your mental health and coming out through the other side. Now you're able to see hope, but you know, and you have the mindset that that wasn't all for naught. So that's a great perspective to have. While at the same time, in one of the other topics we'll mention in a moment, acknowledging both the heavy and light, that is not to say that, you know, you need to suffer in that to be able to get there too. Right. Like, you can work your way out of it and you can be proactive in there and not just sit in there and thinking you have to suffer from it to get to a different place. So those are two different points of the same conversation. But when you are on the other side of it, you are able to be grateful for the highs after you've seen the lows. Is a little bit more of the perspective, as opposed to saying I need to suffer to be able to get somewhere great.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, one of the things I know that you and I have talked about is one of my best friends from grad school a year ago, just a little over a year ago, got diagnosed with ALS. And it's just been, I mean, it's brutal. And it's like, how do you look someone in the eye who had checked everything off the checklist, like had gone to college, went to grad school, had an awesome job, met her husband, like just had her first baby. And then you get this just crushing diagnosis. And I remember sitting with her when she'd come to Houston to visit her sister right after being diagnosed, and just like tears in her eyes and like telling her, you know, I don't know her pain, but I know what it feels like to be forgotten by God. And like, and to be able to relate to her in that moment, like in any small way, like really just made it all worth it.
Absolutely.
But like you said, it's okay to come out the other side of pain and to celebrate that too. Like you don't, it's not something that, you know, you have to strive for or like wear kind of as a martyr.
And that's one thing where it was even a conversation that we had last week at a week ago today, as we're recording, when Amanda and I were at the Conversations Cafe Sip of Hope event, where the main guest there said, like, that's kind of the downside that he sees in a lot of the mental health conversations that he's a part of, and just being a more prominent online figure, where that's kind of the, let me show you the breadth of my mental health or psychological trauma by how much I can make it suck, quote unquote, on Instagram, on Facebook, on social media. That's, again, that's not the, it doesn't have to be that way. You can talk about the good and the bad things in the same day, in the same hour, in the same breath, but, you know, still mourn the pain, mourn the hurt, and then still be very grateful for the joy and the happiness and the hope and everything as well.
Yeah. I mean, I struggle with that even on social media of like, how do you post about a good day, you know, like, and not contribute to this whole Instagrammed version of life that is only perfect. And so it's an interesting thing of like, how do you celebrate well and still acknowledge that there were like 30 moments today where I totally doubted myself and I felt alone, but it was also a really good day too.
Well, I mean, I think you do a good job of that. That was in no way planned or a softball, but you set yourself up there where one of your most recent Instagram posts, I mean, it has people smiling in the picture, but then it starts off with, I used to be scared of everything. So, I mean, like, you do a very good job in that post there, where you're telling both sides of the story, where there is a lot to go through, and you can have pieces of life and pieces of yourself that are hard and tear you apart and break you down. But then also you're grateful for, you know, who you are afterwards. You're grateful for people who stuck by you. You're grateful for knowing that there are good things, but while still acknowledging the bad things and understanding all of that. So, I mean, that was something I wanted to bring up and see if there was anything else you wanted to talk about there, as far as how you felt and kind of processed some of that and understood, you know, if you would have had a similar reaction as the person you are now 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago in that same situation.
Yeah. So you're talking about a post that I just did on Instagram from every year I go skiing with my family. And it's really, and by family, I mean, it's actually usually extended family, my uncle and cousins, but my brother's been able to go the last 2 years and sometimes my dad goes. But I asked my brother this year, I told him I wanted to do my first double black diamond. And what's crazy is, I mean, it was like just 10 years ago that like I really struggled with skiing and like whether or not I even wanted to go because I wasn't good at it. And I was just terrified. And that's kind of how I lived a lot of my life. I didn't like to leave home. I didn't like to be away from my mom as like a small child. I like didn't like flying. And the first I had to fly into this tiny Colorado airport, we had to abort our landing attempt. And I was like, just clear the mountain. Like, I don't want to die, you know? And so like all of, I mean, there's just so much wrapped up in like skiing for me to realize how far I've come. Cause it's, again, like I mentioned I was 9 years old when my parents got divorced, and like the whole visitation thing was never easy for me. And I like some of it, I think, is comfort zone, but as a small girl was just closer to my mom in a lot of ways. And so leaving home was really hard. And so like the idea that like I've gone from like that kind of scared little girl to now like choosing to go skiing every year, sometime without, you know, even my like parent, and then like have progressed to the point where I'm willing to push myself and like do a run that scares me and that I won't be perfect at is just, it's surprising to me. And I don't really know like what has made that change, other than I've just started to realize that like it can be a lot of fun to like put yourself in situations that are new and that scare you. And so I just like, I wanted to share that. My cousins and I had like, after that morning when we did the run, and my brother and cousin Alan were so patient with me. It was not the prettiest like execution of a double black ever. I did fall one time at the very end of it. But
I'm not looking at any casts or broken bones as we record this. So no, I'd say it was a success.
I'll have to tell you the story about my park excursion with our friend Kim after this, okay. Last weekend in Orlando, where like I thought I had broken something. But so, yeah, so I go down the mountain, and then at lunch, my cousins, Alan and Molly, and I were talking about the fact that like they just couldn't believe that like that this is me anymore, of like where did this like scared girl go who now like is just loving adventure and pushing herself. And so I don't know. But all of that to say, like, I don't want to just be the person who posts a picture of a ski trip that makes people who for whatever reason can't go skiing or don't have anybody to ski with, even if they want to, like, I don't want to only show the happy parts of life. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to acknowledge that like the reason that was such a big deal to me is because I chose to do something that I knew I wouldn't be that great at and that would scare me. And like legit at the top of the mountain, I almost started crying and was like, how, I don't understand how I'm going to do this. Cause it was, even though it was sunny, it was still like really windy and snow was blowing, and I couldn't even really see where the mountain like started getting steep. And then it looked really steep from where I was. And I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know how I'm going to do this. And they were like, just like, we'll help you. And so I did. And you know, it was just really fun. But I think it's important to acknowledge kind of all parts of that and not just be like, hey, look at me on my ski trip.
Well, and exactly. I think that that ends up being a key and fundamental concept to an individual transformation, where it's not something where, again, for you don't go to the gym, do one, you know, exercise and like, oh, now I'm ripped. You don't like
right.
change one meal and now you have a perfect body and your diet is fixed. Like, you don't do one yeah. thing and then now you're able to conquer the world. Like, it's incremental. It's you're with each win and each loss, like, you're adding the experience to yourself. You're growing, you're able to do that. So with, you know, with each of the trips that you've been taking so far this year, with your leaning into travel, with your leaning yeah. into the things that you know where you want to be, where it may not be something where it's a discrete or explicit outcome that you're looking, but you're going to show up, you're going to go, you're going to do it. Then that ends yeah. up building up and kind of moving yourself, you know, that much further away from the person that used to be scared of everything, for like you were mentioning in the opening, as far as a lot of the anxiety and all of the a lot of the stuff that surrounds that, where you're able to now lean into yourself and start believing in yourself as a whole, as opposed to misconceptions, preconceptions, or just kind of what your or our brains tell us as a whole.
Right. For sure.
So with that, in the concept or in the vein of leaning into ourselves and living as our full selves, the other thing that we've picked up talking about a lot recently, and up until recently, since they've gone on a hiatus for the season, is A Million Little Things. And yes. there was a quote that I literally took a screenshot of our text conversation and put it in my planning tools that I use for the podcast, because you explicitly said, when we record, can we talk about how I want to be loved the way Gary loves Maggie? And so these are two characters on the show that are dealing with breast cancer. One, by the spoilers, because by this point the season's over, so that's fine. They go through different journeys throughout the season, but one of them ends up, or I guess more specifically, Maggie has a recurrence of her cancer, and then Gary does everything he can to push her into fighting to stay, fighting to for hope, and fighting to stay alive. And by the end of the season, she does end up back in remission.
Yeah.
So why don't you expand a little bit about there, and kind of what drew you into the show, since that's kind of, I love it, so anybody talking about it is going to be good too. But then also like the sentiment around there, and what about that interaction do you love so much?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the show started this fall, and I mean, the way that they were advertising it talked about mental health in just the promos. And I was like, I think I just started out intrigued to see how a television show, and I guess 28 at that time, was going to handle mental health, since it's become something that I'm passionate about. And so I'll tell you, like, the first episode and the way the first episode ends, where it kind of course it's a television show and there's drama amongst the characters, and I was kind of disappointed. And yeah, I was like, what, are they really going to cheapen like mental health to just like a plot twist between two other characters, you know? Like, and I mean, it's not a spoiler since it happens at the end of the first episode, but where they are like, oh, his wife was cheating on him. And I was just kind of almost mad in the beginning of like mental health and suicide and every, like, it's so much more complicated than like an affair. Are we really doing this? And then they've just developed the characters in a way. And then there are other characters. And for those of you who watch it, Rome, and the way they've handled his mental health and kind of parallel battle with anxiety and depression, I think they've handled very, very well, at least in my, again, non-scientific opinion. And so this idea of, like, the show's built around this idea of community and how important, I think it was Kenneth who said at Heart Camp, of just showing up and the idea of just being present in each other's lives and reminding each other that, like, I see you and that there's a place for you here and that life would not be the same without you, I think has just resonated a lot with me, because that's how I feel about community, and community is just so important. But then I have no idea why, like, I just love Gary and Maggie together. And I'm sure part of it's that like quintessential kind of like bad boy, like finds the girl that he loves a little bit, but just the way that he fights for her and like wants her to see herself through his own eyes and everything is just really, really neat to me. And then I just love that they have fun together. And I like that karaoke episode where, I mean, it's totally a television episode again. Like, I don't know that you're ever really going to like a Chinese food restaurant or Thai or whatever it was, and like standing on the table singing a song. But I just think it's a really neat relationship to watch them both struggle with fears and kind of like trying to figure out like, is it worth risking for love when like you don't know what life is going to bring you next, and that they decide and that he pursues her and it's worth it no matter how much he might get hurt. And then of course, like, I love, again, it's kind of a spoiler, but the moment where like they're in his new car and she gets sick. And instead of like him getting mad at her, he was like, what? And then just this look of, I don't know. It's all corny in television, but for whatever reason, I love them together.
No, but it speaks to exactly what we were talking about before, where the notion of community, but then also, again, they're not where I think in a lot of other settings, a lot of when speaking of those topics, we end up having a lot of infallible characters that end up getting, it's like a silver bullet that takes them down almost. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the writing here, where again, I'm right with you as far as after the pilot, it kind of, I was on edge about how they were going to take things. But then as they started developing it, especially based on my love for James Roday, the actor that plays Gary, due to his role in Psych, I was going to give it more of a shot than obviously just the pilot. So they definitely started fleshing it out. And then, you know, a couple episodes in, they start in with the Rome storyline, and then they start, you know, bringing in more of all the different aspects of things. And a couple of the late season episodes were just heavy hitters for the, you know, just kind of emotional roller coasters. And for me, I'm not current on This Is Us this season, but it seems it's a little bit more impactful than some of the This Is Us storytelling, where This Is Us is kind of just a day in the life of drama, whereas we're still trying to get to somewhere inside of the A Million Little Things storylines, which makes a lot of sense. But then also, like, it just relates to me to real life too, because it's a lot of people suffering with mental health problems, and it's not always something where it's just, you know, a day in the life of type stuff, but it's like we're trying to get to the bottom of something, or we're trying to work on a diagnosis, or we're trying to just figure something out, and we still have to deal with life type stuff. So for me, that's been a lot of the realness and the quality of what the writing that they've done and kind of brought it together. So it's interesting as far as an outsider looking at you telling your story and kind of seeing that, and then seeing how the characters then there are finding themselves and finding, you know, especially with Gary and Maggie, finding each other by fighting through things, by working through things, and then understanding where it's like, it's not a perfect world, but they can make the most of it with each other. So it's just an interesting dichotomy that I saw in a lot of the conversations that we've had. So
yeah, and it's funny because now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, when they like dare each other in that karaoke episode, I'm pretty sure Maggie dares Gary to do something that scares him. Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure
when that's he what it climbs is. The wall. So I think it's funny that even that, like, you know, that kind of intersects with the, like, do something that scares me kind of thing. But it's just, it's a great show. And I think any story that kind of talks about the importance of community, and I mean, like, the title is, you know, A Million Little Things, on the idea that friendship isn't a big thing, it's a million little things. And I think that's so true. I've thought a lot about, you know, we talk about, maybe it's more just like in a face setting, about like, there's no greater love than to lay down your life for, you know, someone. And I think that kind of gets made out to be a much bigger thing than it is, where it's more like, I'd jump in front mm-hmm. of you and take that bullet for you. And like, really, I think it means I'm going to lay down like this thing that I would rather go do to like go to the concert with you that you want to go see, so that you don't have to go by yourself. Or I'm going to spend like 15 minutes less with my spouse or child tonight so that I can talk to you on the phone. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's like these little things of showing up and being present that I really do think not only are important in friendship, but are just like, I think it's what life is about and is designed to be.
Absolutely. I completely agree 100% there. And again, it goes back to exactly what you said Kenneth talked about, and I think he even mentioned something similar in his episode last season, but it's something where, it's about showing up, and you just have to show up over and over and over again, and Sometimes yeah. it's showing up to things you expect. Sometimes it's showing up to things you have no idea what you're showing up for. But the fact that you're there and the other person or the community knows that you're there, and you know, it's just the security and kind of connectedness that you have just by the continued showing up, then it makes mm-hmm. it easier to be symbiotic and symmetric and have the rest of the folks show up for you too. So that's a beautiful yeah. way of looking at it. So why don't we transition to some of what got you through those last 2 years then, of talking about Heart Camp. And then in some of our notes, you've mentioned If You Feel Too Much multiple times. Mm-hmm. So why don't you give some of your background with how you got exposed to Heart Camp as an idea? And then, you know, what's your background with If You Feel Too Much, and when did you find that and see that for the first time?
Yeah, sure. So I guess like it would have been 2017, was on Amazon one day buying a book that I have actually never read for like that a friend, this is an example of where I didn't show up for someone, but a friend of mine and I had talked about reading this book. And so I got online to order it. And then like after I put it in my cart, Amazon popped up like other people or whatever the suggestions is. Mm-hmm. And there's this book called If You Feel Too Much. And I was like super intrigued because the pastor that I mentioned that had moved back to Ohio, his wife and him as well have always told me that like I feel things very deeply. And so I was like, what is this book about?
Bingo.
Like, if you feel too much, but I feel like maybe I should look at this. And so I ended up ordering it. And it like they got here and I like started reading it. And I think it was like a Friday night. I was headed out of town for work the next day. And like I literally was like in tears in just like the intro section mm-hmm. of, and I kind of have described it. That was a period of time where like there was a lot of pain with the like unraveling and kind of end of a, like, I'll use the word relationship to describe it. It was just the end of like a friendship and relationship. And so I was having a hard time even articulating like what that pain felt like, and just kind of sum it back to what we were talking about of like, what does it look like to be in your 30s and single and navigate life and mm-hmm. holidays and everything. So I remember like reading the line again, this is like literally in the first few pages, about like the silence of being asked to unknow your favorite person. And then talking about like, I think that's the context of like, life is such a contrast, mm-hmm. you know, it's like happy things. It just like, it stuck with me, like, or has stuck with me since then. So anyway, like I devour this book that, and I kind of remember at that point, like I did not, like I had heard of To Write Love on Our Arms
that was my
at
next
that
question.
Point. Yeah. So I had heard of it like years ago. I mean, so I knew it was like a mental health organization, but in all honesty, it wasn't anything that I like followed. I realized that at that point, more in probably some of his like social and political activism, like Jamie was getting retweeted into my timeline a lot. And so I would kind of like put it together of, okay, wait, I think this book is by that guy. And so then I started following Jamie and To Write Love a little more, and saw like one day, I guess on Twitter, that he was going to do this Heart Camp thing and like a 2-day workshop. And I remember texting with some girlfriends of mine because literally I had been wanting to do a winter adventure. I just wanted to kind of get away. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, even when I'm traveling alone, like I feel less alone because I feel like I'm doing something.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
Like just, like, it's very empowering to me. And so I told my girlfriends that I'd wanted a winter adventure. I'd been kind of thinking like going to Norway or something to see the Northern Lights. And I'm like, should I spend money on this like workshop by this author of the book that I keep telling you has changed my life? And they're like, do it. And so I signed up. And I mean, it was one of those that, again, like, I'm, you know, it's crazy to me that I just like signed up to go to 2 days in Florida with like people I didn't know and all this stuff. But I think I was telling you that I just kind of figured if it's a room full of people who have related to this book or to Write Love as much as I have, then like, I don't see how this ends anything short of amazing. And so I loved it. It was great. But I remember, and I shared this at the reunion this year, and I was really tired. I did not stay up as late as everybody else while we were there. And I had come into that at that point, like in a really good place. I was feeling like strong in community and everything. And so I didn't initially have this like same reaction of feeling like I had found my family that some people had that I think, whether that was just their connection was stronger instantly or if they had been missing more of that at home. And so I remember loving it and coming back and like talking about how great it was and like all of these things that were making me think and just the value of vulnerability and authenticity. But I was also really second guessing myself because I hadn't stayed up. I even like things as silly as like when I would post about it, like no one would like mm-hmm. comment on it. And then I realized that, oh, you're going to use a hashtag and your profile's like private. No one's going to interact with you because they can't see it.
You and Amanda had the same problem.
We've talked about that before. And so like I realized, okay, maybe I won't be the forgotten part of Heart Camp, but that was something that I really struggled with. And so I like remember sitting here when we were doing kind of a group chat or something, and I just realized I was like this community didn't end when we left Florida, and I can still pour into it. Mm-hmm. And it has become one of the coolest things about life and like how life can still surprise you now that I have become really close to a lot of people there. You know, like your wife is definitely one of those now, you and, you know, the group that kind of stayed around and hung out in Florida and our friend Kim and like a whole bunch of people. I don't even want to name names because mm-hmm. I can't name all like 40 plus people from our group plus the reunion.
An Oscars acceptance speech where you're going to forget somebody.
Exactly. But it's just been this like amazing thing to be a part of in community that like, again, like celebrates good things, mourns hard things, and does them both. And no one is looked at as a burden for having hard days, and everyone's like happy to celebrate the good things. And so I don't even know if I'm answering your original question,
but that's
how I found it. It's been totally unexpected, and then kind of connecting it to the travel and adventure. So where it really started becoming a good thing for me and a really meaningful thing was kind of like I described the back half of 2018 as being really hard. I started really trying to look at life of what if I never get married? Mm-hmm. And like, what if I need to just accept that I'm not going to get married? And that I think was a healthy idea to look at trying to find contentment in it. But the way I went about thinking about it to some extent maybe like wasn't as great, because all of a sudden I started just seeing like how alone I was. I, you know, would obsess over like any time I remember, like I probably shouldn't even tell the story, but like I saw something where some siblings of mine got together, you know, and I wasn't invited. And I was like, is no one like, seriously, am I forgotten, like mm-hmm. everywhere, you know? And I was just taking things extremely personally and just really, really starting to worry about like, do I fit in this world at all? And it was the Heart Camp group, I think, that really I started seeing like, I fit here. And so it was just this totally unexpected blessing. And I love that I went from like feeling and fearing that I would be forgotten to feeling just as part of everything at the reunion and knowing that like this group of friends would do anything for me or for each other.
And there's a lot that you touched on in there that I think is summed up by some of the notes you had sent over earlier, where I agree for a number of folks, and even we've said it on a number of episodes where folks said like they didn't know what they were looking for, but they found it. There's a, you know, a handful of folks that, you know, still didn't know what they found, et cetera, right. et cetera. Or it's the joke that you can't really define it.
Yeah, it is still really hard. Like, I get kind of mad at people when they're like, oh, it sounds like you went to a really cool conference. And I'm like, it's so much more than that.
Yeah, trying to talk more people into going it in addition to just creating a podcast for all the benefits of it.
Yeah, right.
It's been very interesting to be more discreet about and explicit about what it actually is. But yeah. the notion that you said as far as the difference between the two sessions or showing up, and so it ends up being a little bit more the layers of the showing up phase, because it's more than just being there physically. Sometimes that's mm-hmm. all there is to it. Thinking back to some other Hart Camper's comments where Erin on her Blackbird podcast mentioned like through some of her divorce, she just wanted somebody to sit with her in the house. So sometimes mm-hmm. that's enough.
Right.
But I mean, for most of their, like we all showed up in a room, but then if it's not what you wanted it to be, but then you don't voice or take action to make it different than what you wanted it to be and what you're experiencing, then you really, it's just kind of, you're leaving yourself to blame. So that's where, I mean, there were a number of people who mentioned that similarly, you know, at the reunion in January versus the first time, or a number of people that I've seen kind of take a different tactic since then on social media or in some conversations, where instead of just showing up and letting it happen to you, you have to have that vulnerability. You have to drop the pretense. You have to show up, because when you do show up in that authentic nature, that's when everybody else is going to have that similar conversation and the ability to then engage you the same way you want to be engaged. And it opens it up and it's a little bit easier, and you don't really have to worry about all the what ifs and the woulda, shoulda, couldas. And I mean, from my perspective, to kind of use some of your language, it helps you to be seen and not feel like you're forgotten when you say, okay, hold up, like everybody else is having a great time, but this is where I want to go with my participation. And then nobody can know that until you voice it, and then it get brought into the conversation and discussion.
Yeah. And I think too, I mean, I had been kind of reluctant to share a whole bunch. I mean, one, cause it just kind of makes me nervous to, as an introvert, share a whole mm-hmm. bunch of deep feelings in a room full of strangers. But I also just kind of like sometimes second guess whether anybody even wants to hear, like, am I adding value to a group conversation? Especially when, I mean, people, you know, various struggles, various different walks of life. And, you know, my biggest struggle feeling, you know, like, am I going to be alone for forever? Or like how long, you know, like the whole dreams deferred thing, like, is that struggle, like, should it be allowed to take up space in a room like that, mm-hmm. you know, or just with anyone? And kind of finding, and I like have done like a little bit of listening to different episodes, this podcast, and I can't remember which episode it was, but of just talking about the power of sharing story, and that you never know, mm-hmm. like who will relate to your story and who, like, who needs to hear that somebody else struggles with something. And so I'm trying to like tell myself that I'm not being annoying when I share my story, or if I post something a little longer on Instagram with a picture. And that's just been kind of a new thing for me to try to live into, of that, like, it's okay if I talk and share my story.
Mm-hmm. And similar to the aforementioned problem of not getting a bunch of likes on things that you share, even if it is a private or public account, depending on how you set it up.
Right.
It's more about the cathartic nature of you sharing is putting it out there. And so that's, for me, over the last, you know, 14 months, that's something that I've grown into much more, as far as, regardless of where it goes, the intention or whatever, but it's you know, sharing that experience, sharing that sentiment for the sake of sharing it, because putting it out there is what is how we communicate, is how we interact. So regardless of whether or not it gets things in, it would be something where I got mad at Facebook in general, where like you put a really heartfelt post out there and it gets 10 likes, and then you share a dumb video and it gets 40 likes, and it's like, okay, like what's the point now? I quit, type thing.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, taking a lot of work to understand, for me at least, that it's all about the intention. And I'm you know, as far as likes and Instagram and all of that stuff, it may be ending up something where, you know, just on that metric, it's completely different. But the people that are going to connect with the sentiment that is more heartfelt and more deep and honest, those are the benefits, and those are the people I'm putting that out there for. Whereas anything else is just, you know, it's superfluous, or taking each item as it is what it is, type thing.
Yeah.
And being able to share what we feel just for the sake of sharing what we feel, because that's what we feel, as opposed to keeping it bottled up, putting our heads down, going through life without ever sharing it. Because I have so many different, you know, quotes from all of our Heart Camp friends running through my head right now, but you know, that's the beautiful part of life, is having all those different feelings, both the heavy and light. And that's what you touched on again in the aforementioned Instagram post, but having all those different pieces. And yeah, sometimes we can share the great stuff easily, and then sometimes it sucks, but we twist our own arm to share the stuff that sucks too. And that's when, you know, we end up seeing that not everybody is as perfect as we think they are. And then we realize that it's okay for us to share kind of those same imperfections. And when that ends up being a force multiplier between each of us, that's when you start building that really sound and profound community.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's how there's just so much beauty in people sharing. And I think people like connect over story. And yeah, I mean, like, you just, to see somebody, you know, like, requires to some extent them sharing something. I mean, like, you know someone well enough, you can read what being quiet means and everything. But I just, there's a lot of beauty and hope that comes with people sharing story and allowing people in to the good and the hard parts of life, because that's where connection is, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that covers a lot of what we wanted to talk about for Heart Camp. And we've pretty much nailed thoroughly the concept of community to you, and both in both sections that we talked about, and, you know, celebrating the good, celebrating the bad, showing up regardless, and acknowledging others, helping others, and sacrificing some of your own self to get there. But through all of that, that's all talking about either transforming yourself or also helping others. So what is it now that you're doing or has changed about what you've done for self-care, and how have you taken that through the last couple of years, from, you know, what part of self-care got you through the bad parts of 2017, 2018, and then how is that changing for 2019?
Yeah. I mean, I think to some extent, like, friends have been self-care and deep, like, conversation and real conversation. As an introvert, like, I mean, I can talk your ear off, but I need to feel like I know you, and please let's not chit chat about the weather for 5 minutes. But I mean, so I have some really, really good girlfriends that have, you know, like, gone to dinner. One of my best friends ever, her favorite restaurant is also Chili's. And so we like to go to Chili's together. So the 2 for $20, although I don't know that they offer it anymore, is self-care in some ways. But so, like, I would say good conversation with friends, and then travel to some extent, like, as an adult, has always, like, been, like, something that I've enjoyed, you know, whether it's going to Lake Travis every summer with my family, and then I've started taking friends with me to Lake Travis. And so just kind of doing some of that kind of stuff has, I think, always been self-care. And then it has become harder to do some of that with friends and even family as people have started having kids and everything. And so I think I told you, I mean, like, I'm bad at it. I poured myself into work for a while because I was like, well, I mean, I felt more valued at work than I did anywhere else mm-hmm. in my life. And so it was not hard to put a lot of hours in. And so I'm not like trying to think back to like how I got through some of the like painful days in 2017, I think was just people showing up. But then last year I started like feeling myself not doing things that I liked or that brought me joy because I was like, well, I'm just going to have to do that by myself. Mm-hmm. Like there's no point. And so I spent quite a few weekends like on my couch watching movies. I like for a period of time may or may not have watched too many Hallmark movies, which I realize is ridiculous. But so I just somehow toward the end of the year, well, actually it was, I had gone to Denver in October to see my friend Angela, who has ALS. And kind of the day before I saw her, I drove from Denver to Aspen and back. And it was this like crazy impractical 6-hour round trip. But I also like one reason was I had never seen the Rocky Mountains, mm-hmm. not in the wintertime. And I just remember just how happy I was driving a rented Tahoe through the Rocky Mountains, like listening to music and just seeing how beautiful like the world is. And I just all of a sudden realized like I really am happier when I'm adventuring. Like I don't feel alone in this moment. And so it was somewhere around then that I decided that I was going to challenge myself in 2019 to be on a plane once a month in pursuit of adventure and surprise. And so travel really has kind of become a form of self-care for me in 2019. And I hate almost hearing myself say that because I realize like what a privilege it is mm-hmm. that I am able to do that. And so like there's some guilt that comes along with it, but I'm just trying to say yes to adventure this year. And it's been really, really good for me. And I feel like I'm in a happier, just more content place than I've been in a really long time. And I think that's a large part of it because sitting on my couch at my house by myself was not, it was being lazy. It wasn't caring for myself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's the kind of both two points there as far as the self-care, where again, the connotation usually is like bath bombs and bubble bath and all of that right. stuff. And so obviously there's a whole spectrum outside of that, but then also just the movies and Netflix and all that stuff that can be a start. But then again, it tends to be just an avoidance mechanism as opposed to self-care. So there's definitely a balance right. and a tipping point yeah. there. And absolutely. I agree, the notion of adventure comes with a certain amount of privilege as well as the concept of just self-care in general.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair point. Yeah.
And so trying to break that stigma where instead of saying it's self-care and it's all these positive, gushy, you know, rainbows and butterflies type things, it's just like every person, regardless, has to do shit to take care of themselves because otherwise, stealing Kurt's quote from the reunion, like it's our job to pour ourselves into other people, but it's not our job to fill them up. So right. it ends up being a case where we can only do so much on our own before we have to do something to restore ourselves. Whatever we do to restore ourselves, that is then self-care. Right. So it's something where unless you're doing something in that realm to progressively build yourself back up, if you just keep, you know, pouring out, there's nothing that's going to be there. And so, yeah, I mean, adventure can be driving from back and forth between Aspen and Denver. Adventure can be flying somewhere. It can be, you know, visiting San Francisco. It can be doing yeah. whatever. It could be going to the Chili's in the next town over. It could be adding
that would be a good one.
It would be adding in a new chain like Fridays or something into your rotation. And things like that to kind of spice it up there. But yeah, agreed. There's all different levels of what you're going to do there. So it's whatever ends up getting you, and kind of stealing Amanda's quote for some of the stuff that is going to be coming out next week in our episodes, but it's something as far as building a life that you're not trying to escape from. So knowing that a lot of what you're doing and knowing that you have that wanderlust currently gives you the ability to indulge yourself in there and invest into that so that it is a part of your life and not something that you're trying to run from or run to or anything like that. But it's a part of who you are, and it's restorative as opposed to just something that is exhaustive.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. Like the idea of building a life that you don't want to escape from, and that could look like a million different things for people, but I had never thought about self-care that way. But I think that hits the nail on the head.
Exactly. Based on all the conversation that we had so far, and then what you were talking about as far as self-care and some of the community aspects, when you mentioned you're somewhat enabled-ish on the Enneagram, do you know what type you are in that realm then? And have you taken a test or done any sort of investigation there?
Yeah. So I've taken tests, which I realize Enneagram purists do not support. You should like let your number find you. But so most tests that I take say that I'm a one wing two.
Okay.
And the more that I learn about it, I think that is correct. I think my two wing is very strong. I like without a doubt, everything that I read, I am a one at work. Like, and you know, and I was in school, you know, like that kind of
perfectionist.
And, but I like the way that they describe it as a moral perfectionist, kind of that you're just always worried about like what is right or wrong and, you know, all of this. And so I definitely know that I am a one in that regard, but I do think that I have some really strong two tendencies, especially if I'm feeling healthy and if I'm taking care of myself, I will feel that kind of two and the caretaker kind of aspect come out, and I'm able to like see and pour into others more than not. But so I think that is true, but someday I will actually like read the full book about it and we will see. I know I'm not a four and I'm not a five. those are like, for whatever reason, like, I see more people posting about like those two types. So like, I oddly understand what four and five are, but like, I have no idea what a six is. And I just know that nine is, if you can't figure out what you are, you're probably a nine. Mm-hmm. And then threes have something to do about being high achieving.
Based on the acts of service that I've known you to contribute to, it was definitely going to be two in there somewhere. And then based on a lot of the conversation we've had tonight, it was definitely, I can see the one being in there. So I would definitely agree. It's either a one wing two or a two wing one.
Sweet.
But there ends up being, and obviously that's me typing from afar as a two.
Yeah.
So there's obviously plenty of other things that could impact that or change. But Sarah from our group, or from your group and the group chat and everything else, she is a five and a very proud five.
Yeah.
And she uses the phrase, the fiviest five to ever five for some of these things. And so a lot of the twoiest twos to ever two type things ends up being a lot of the stuff where we'll end up, Amanda and I will end up talking about something and you've already contributed to something, or you've already sent somebody something, or you've already done something. So that's where it's like the reason that it ended up being something where from afar I was typing you as far as two somewhere is because all the stuff that you're doing is the same stuff that Amanda and I do. And we're again, the twoiest twos to ever two type thing. So it ends up being a case where we're both in those spectrums. It ended up being something where I would expect you to kind of exist in that section. And I forget what the one piece is. Again, this is me resisting my urge to learn and understand and take care of everybody else's number, but focus mainly on the twos and myself.
I like it.
So the two, three, and four section ends up being like the heart triad is what it's called.
Yeah.
And so I definitely see you sitting kind of straddling that from the, I believe, the head and the heart type yeah. section there. So that I think the One Wing Two is probably a good fit. So when you do get around to reading that or ordering a book on Amazon and then ordering something else and then falling in love with the other book.
Oh, like I have a book. I've ordered it on Amazon. I just have not read it.
Yeah. Well, the one that I consistently reference is the one that I picked up at a used bookstore last summer when I went to see, I believe, Ant-Man and Wasp and had extra time to kill, and then nice. Just went ahead and turned around. I was about to leave empty-handed, and it was sitting on the end of the shelf, so I bought it for like $1.80.
Nice.
But it's still a silver bullet for all of everything that we've done and every type that we've looked at. It's been pretty spot on. So, but there's still plenty of other ones out there as far as Sacred Enneagram or Back to You and plenty of those books.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, some people I think take personality tests like way too seriously, mm-hmm. but I also think some people are way too dismissive of them. And there's a lot of value. I mean, particularly like what I have read, and like I love Enneagram and Coffee on Instagram.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's been a big part that's like really affirmed for me, like the one and two aspect. But I think it can just be really freeing to realize that some of the things about you are just you.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just how I am. And like there's no amount of like work that I could do to like change that about me. Now I can change how I let that like affect how I view the world or what I get worried about, but it's just me and it's okay. And I can just learn how to like when I need to lean into other people's strengths in different settings, and that's fine. So it's been like what little I know about it, which I feel like I know more than the average person, but I'm not like a complete, like, you know, guru at it by any means. But whether it's Myers-Briggs or like we did one in grad school that was called the Strength Deployment Inventory, okay. that measured kind of what your personality type was kind of in just a normal day-to-day, like what motivates you. But then it's the only one that I've ever seen that then also measures how you react in conflict.
Okay.
And they're often different. Mm-hmm. And so it's really Absolutely. Like, I just think it's really fascinating and it helps you kind of understand yourself better, but then also more importantly, how to react or like interact with other people. And so Naomi from like our group is a five as well. And I've learned a lot about fives from everything that she posts, but she's also really quiet. And now I get it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just her. Like, and so I think it's just a really cool way to understand each other, and you kind of make it what it is.
Yeah. And by the time this episode airs, we will have had a couple of back-to-back fives coming up with Sarah from your group and then Emily from my group, who you would think that they were sitting next to each other talking about being a five, because they basically say the exact same thing as far as like the checklist of all the five stuff of saying introvert and how to handle things and quiet, where I'm very happy to be here, but just let me be here. You don't need to interact with me. Some of that stuff. Yeah. So it ends up being, again, where it is the way you are. And that's what makes you happy. And you understand how to deal with things. You understand how, what you do when you're feeling good, what you do when you're feeling stressed. So again, it's not something where you have to run from it or anything like that, but it's again, another tool in your arsenal to understand why we are the way we are and start to kind of feel some of that and work towards it and kind of help you grow in your skill sets.
For sure. It's been really fun. I talk to people a lot about it, and I think they're like, some people are like, what are you talking about? And then others are like, oh my gosh, like finally somebody that I can talk to about this.
So, I mean, we'll start to wrap up. Is there anything that you'd want, or a single thing that you'd want someone to take away from your story?
I mean, I think we've talked about it, but just the idea that pain can be redeemed and that there will be days that you find beauty in it and beauty in life in ways that are, it's far deeper than you could have ever imagined. And you can point that back to your own hard days and to just see it like for purpose to be breathed either, you know, like into your pain or to be born out of it is just this kind of incredible feeling. And I don't know, like in a way, I don't want to overuse the word miracle, but I think it's just a really, really beautiful thing. And so that is what I would say.
Well, I don't think you have to worry about using or overusing the term miracle, where I believe I've said it in one episode. I don't remember which episode, but quoting one of my favorite comedians, Kyle Kinane, he ends up saying you just have to redefine what a miracle is. And it's just the universe showing you that it can still surprise you. And that's one thing that I've taken to be where there's things where I didn't know the appropriate level of gratitude, but also wonderment to place in this one box for how I need to react to something. And so that's exactly what it kind of the way I've taken it and the way I've phrased it. And just that's stuck in my head to understand that where there's a lot that we don't understand, we don't need to explain, and we won't figure it out, but just knowing or kind of observing what's happening and letting it flow through us and letting us be a part of that is a beautiful thing. And so in and of itself, to me, that is the miracle, and just being able to kind of exist in that space. And like you said, with pain and growth and joy and hope and all those things kind of constantly in flux and coinciding with each other is the beautiful miracle there.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you mentioned, and I know we're wrapping up, but you mentioned earlier kind of like that intersection of mental health and faith for me. And it's really been kind of like my pain that has strengthened my faith in a way. And like, I know that sounds like an oxymoron of kind of where, when I've felt forgotten by God and everything else in that, it's those moments of connection through pain that like make it all make sense. And I've started to just like really think about like Jesus and the idea of him feeling forsaken and just the beauty in like that is how the Christian faith believes salvation occurs and everything being like through a place of pain and forsakenness. I don't even know if that's a word, but a feeling forsaken, being like that we're not alone in our pain. And I don't know, like I'm not saying that well, but it's just been a really important thing to me. And like, it's just always amazing to me, like in my life, how I've seen pain be redeemed.
No, and again, that's I think you were spot on with how you were describing it, because that ends up building, again, you're sharing lived experience. I wanted to say sharing shared experience, but that was too redundant. You're sharing lived experience. You're working through, and you're, as individuals, seeing, you know, collective miracles of all scales, and then you're coming together and bringing that together and understanding it. I think that's what, at some level, all community is based around, or what all community wants to be. But then how much heart, how much commitment you put into that ends up being a little bit more around the faith and spirituality community. Kind of, I'm glad you used the word faith and not necessarily religion there. That ends up getting into the religious argument type discussion. So those are things where, and again, we had this conversation in Florida, but it would be something where at a certain point in my life, just having that conversation would have been a non-starter for me. But now, like what you're saying there, where you can have a redemption of pain, a redemption of your lived experience, and how does that apply to your faith and spirituality, then we can have that same conversation and how I would take it and how does that apply to me and things like that. And where, again, it may not be the same for everyone, but walking through those and understanding how that affects us and how we interact with our community and work through there ends up being, again, what it's all about, and going back to the restorative care that we need to figure it out. So how do we exist? How do we, where do we think we're going and all this stuff. And again, it just, that goes into its own 10,000 foot rabbit hole that you end up spiraling down.
Sure.
And so it's an infinitely layered onion.
Well, it is. And I resonate a lot with you, like in the difference of faith and religion, though, that I just want to acknowledge, because I mean, I think there's a lot of horrifying things happening in the name of religion in America, much less like the world, and the way that people get talked about and excluded. And it's just, like, it's just horrifying. And it makes me like really sad of how much of that is done like under the guise of religion. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to fix it. I'm trying to use my voice more to speak up in those areas. And if people like in a religion or a religious setting don't like me or think I'm a heretic because of it, like, good. Like, yep. I'm
so be it.
Yep. So anyway,
no, similarly, it's taken me about 18 years to understand exactly what Kevin Smith was trying to do when he created Dogma, the movie. And mm-hmm. so there's a line at the end, where a couple of the characters are going back and they're arguing back and forth about, you know, what the foundation of religion and its religious beliefs and things like that. And they get down to the point where it's not a belief, but you have a feeling. So you can change feelings, or feelings change, but it's much harder to change beliefs. Right. And so, yeah, I'm right there with you where if we can't have those discussions, then we're setting ourselves up for failure to begin with. So those are many more discussions that I'm sure we will have along the way, but it is something that needs to happen at some point or another.
Yep.
And so the last question, I mean, that's based on some of the artists that you had referenced, is a perfect transition based on that religion versus faith discussion too. Mm-hmm. But what's one song that you'd want to share about your story or related to your episode?
Yeah, so I'm going to totally do what I told you I might do, which is switch the song that I was thinking about. But I would say Switchfoot's Joy Invincible. It's really funny. I've been obsessed with the new Switchfoot album. And I think at some point in time, like almost every song has been my favorite one off of it. But the chorus of this just talks about like Hallelujah Nevertheless was a song that pain couldn't destroy, and I just love the idea of Hallelujah Nevertheless and the idea of joy being in the midst of all of it. And I feel like that's a more true kind of, it's just kind of where I am right now.
For puns, I'm perfectly happy that you switched to Switchfoot.
Yeah,
but
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, I mean that's a great one. I haven't, just based off of everything going on in my life, I haven't ventured out.
It's not like you've been busy
into new music, but that's one that's been at the top of my mental queue to check out on Spotify. So I'm glad that we've got some new Switchfoot on there, as in addition to Terry having probably my favorite Switchfoot song on there from her episode with Live It Well. But I'm definitely looking forward to checking that out and adding some more of that in there to bring more of that goodness and the grace and just, you know, the sheer emotion that they have in a lot of their stuff and having it be just awesomeness in music. So
for sure.
Thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google, and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.